This is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. The European Commission's competition watchdog Margarita Vestager has had big tech in her crosshairs for years. She's been on a mission to make competition in the industry fairer using record fines to show she means business. In court, Ms. Vestager has lost two high-profile cases against Qualcomm and Intel, but last week she got a win when a top European court ruled Google broke competition rules and fined the search giant a record $3.8 billion. Ms. Vestager told me what that could mean for the future of competition across the industry.
I'm very happy and obviously also relieved because we make our cases to be able to defend them. But I respect that the court can come to another conclusion. And here, you know, it was almost fully upheld. And that, of course, for us is a big win.
The court did, though, lower the fine for Google. Are you disappointed by that?
No, not at all. You know, I fully respect the court's discretion and we will, of course, study in more detail what is meant for future exclusivity cases. But I think in general, this is a big positive push for what we're doing in the tech sector and also shows, I think, the importance of the case-by-case competition law enforcement to complement the Digital Markets Act, which is a regulation which will come in very soon to tell gatekeepers what they can do and what they cannot do.
So you may not be disappointed, but obviously Google said that it was, and it argued that pre-installed apps on its smartphones are actually beneficial to consumers because it allows them to sell more ads that keep a majority of its services free. In that case, are you preparing for an appeal to the European Court of Justice on this decision?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's really, really important to maintain that nothing comes for free. We're getting used to pay with our data. What is still difficult is to assess how much we actually pay when we pay in data. And that, I think, is a really important thing to remember once we are presented with sort of this fiction that things are for free. Let's see what happens when it comes to potential Google appeals in this case. And of course, we'll take it from there. But as said, we are obviously ready to defend our case.
This ruling is a win for you and the commission after two recent losses against Intel and Qualcomm in the courts. Do you think that just the high-profile nature of some of these cases, despite even those losses, is having an effect on companies already adapting to this new environment of what you are bringing in with the commission?
Well, I would sure hope so. The Qualcomm judgment is very, very specific. You probably saw that we have decided not to appeal it because we find that the reasons why we lost it, they're very case specific. And we say, okay, case over. But I would hope that at long last, it sort of sinks in that we have the ambition to rein in market power, to allow the market to be fair, open, that there is a competitive drive for innovation that every consumer can enjoy. That message ought to have sunk in quite some time ago because this has been, you know, a priority discussion, not only in Europe, but actually across the globe.
And you mentioned the Digital Markets and the Digital Services Act. In July, the European Parliament passed those new set of rules regulating this industry, but there's still another about a year to go before they're actually applied. What happens in this interim period then?
Well, the Digital Markets Act was signed this week, so it will come into effect by mid-October, and then it's applicable by next spring, mid-April, which means that the designation process will start, and by early 2024, those who are designated as gatekeepers, those with real market power, they will have to comply. And that, at least for our legal system, that's actually record speed.
Record speed. So what does it mean exactly for those who are not familiar with these new rules? What exactly does it mean for companies like Facebook, Google, Amazon? What do these new rules mean?
Our starting point is quite straightforward. With great power comes great responsibility. So if you fulfill a number of objective criteria, that sort of shows that you have this real market power that you can decide who's in the market, who's not, which is why we called it a gatekeeper. If you are then designated, well, there's a number of things that you cannot do anymore. And there's a number of things that you must do. For instance, you must allow for a second app store within your operating system. You must give people their own data in order for them to use those data to compete against you, just to give you two obvious examples. And one of the things that you cannot do is that you cannot promote yourself. which was the subject of the first Google case.
And we're talking to you now as you're on a trip to the U.S. And at the beginning of this month, the EU opened a new office there in San Francisco. It's the hub of American technological innovation. Do you think with that there's hope that a physical presence will sort of keep this new era of regulation at the forefront in a place where, as you sort of alluded to, the approach to regulation is quite different than that in Europe?
This is a priority. We are following, you know, my own country, Denmark, has invested in tech diplomacy actually for quite some time. And we now enforce that also from a European perspective in order to have a presence. Still, you know, we have open doors in Brussels for anyone who think, may I be designated as a gatekeeper? What does this mean to me? In order for businesses to have time to prepare for compliance. And that, I think, is a very important part of the message to those who are really, really powerful, that it's a planetary effort, actually, to make sure that we have fairness and competition.
And we're talking, obviously, about making sure competition stays robust in the tech sector. You've highlighted, though, that more competition helps keep prices down in all parts of the economy. And obviously, as we talk now, inflation is a huge concern for people all around the world. And it's driven in part by Russia's war in Ukraine and the impact that that's having on the energy space. Do you think there's more that the Commission can do in terms of competition to help EU governments sort of ease the price pressures on consumers that we're seeing now?
We have one specific investigation towards Gazprom and their market behavior. And as you say, sort of the weaponization of energy from the Russian side, which started actually long before the invasion, that has driven inflation to a very high degree. I think energy prices is give or take 40% of the inflation pressure. So this is absolutely top of mind. For some families, you know, the energy bill takes up a huge proportion of their income. Same for small, medium-sized businesses. But here, competition law enforcement is a subcontractor. We really need a general approach, but we, of course, will play our part. And my colleagues in the national competition authorities in Europe, they watch out eagerly to make sure that no one take advantage of the situation to gain, you know, a profit that is not warranted by problems in the supply chain or energy prices, whatever legitimate reasons there may be for price increases.
Another part of easing these inflation pressures is perhaps more investment in new technologies. And in July, the Commission approved investment in the hydrogen energy sector. What role do you see those kinds of investments playing in the need to diversify away from dependence on Russian energy?
This is absolutely of the essence. The energy crisis is accelerating the green transition. It's really important to keep the investment signal strong so that we invest in renewable energy, in the hydrogen production. And these huge investments in hydrogen, they are very important. They have a pan-European perspective. They are sort of in the cutting edge of how to make hydrogen industrial scale, how to find new ways of using it. So that is one part of it. And then we have the Repower EU proposal, which will fast forward permitting and investment support for renewable energy, because we need to move on really, really fast in order not to prolong the energy crisis.
Are there any specific projects that you've seen through this important projects of common European interest projects? Are there any of those that stand out to you that are, you know, particularly hopeful in helping Europe reduce its dependence?
You see projects from big and small member states. You see projects from big and small businesses. There is sort of a hydrogen ecosystem in the making that is really strong. While at the same time, other technologies, they are also being promoted. We have a project to decrease the energy use of semiconductors, because that is obviously also part and parcel of a technological future. And the carbon footprint of technology needs to be reduced, which is why these projects to find more and more energy efficient technology is integrated in what we do, both in hydrogen, but also in standalone projects.
It's sort of twofold, isn't it? Because it helps with energy independence, and it also works toward common goals of more environmentally friendly technologies.
Yes, and I think it has made us see the world in a much more diverse manner. Right now, we have seen the success of diversifying into liquefied gas, LNG, instead of the Russian pipeline gas, so that storage is full. We can calmly look towards the winter that is coming. And that, of course, has made us more integrated with parts of the world where we did not have this sort of import of gas as a commodity. And I think that is also healthy for the future, that we need to diversify much more when it comes to essential inputs, also when it comes to raw materials, because a lot of raw material used to come from Russia, from Ukraine, and obviously it's not sustainable in the long run to have very high dependency on very few vendors in risk areas.
I suppose the big question around some of these investments is how long it might take some of these technologies to really take off, because the need is now. Do you think some of these projects have shorter term horizons than others?
Some do, and we also have standalone projects to use hydrogen in high intensive energy usage that can be, for instance, steel, to move forward to a production of green steel. So it's not all, you know, gigantic projects integrated. It's also big specific projects to decarbonize production so that everything in the value chain eventually will become green. But the challenge, of course, is exactly as you say it, is right here and now that energy prices are really, really painful to people. And at the same time, we need to push forward with solutions that only would have a mid or long-term effect. And that, I think, is really important for any policymaker to do our best to provide solutions here and now, but not losing the long-term perspective, because that would only prolong the crisis.
Margareta Vestager, European Commission Competition Commissioner and Executive Vice President for A Europe Fit for a Digital Age. Thank you so much for your time.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.